It has been the most fantastic day. Slightly surreal to come back because I've still got all the memories of when I graduated the first time. And that was quite different because I had all the anxiety of exams, the anxiety of looking at the results. Phew, the relief when I discovered that I had got a decent degree. But also that uncertainty that when you're 21 or 22, you have no idea what you're going to go on to do. I don't think I had a job in mind. And this is really very different. So to come back securing a job, it's just been an absolute treat. It's been a joy. And it was so lovely to sit there on the podium and look at all the young graduands becoming graduates and remember, you know, our generation, our year, being just like that and kind of nervous, enthusiastic, thrilled, excited, and the huge smiles on some of the faces were just amazing.
You had a good time at university?
I had an absolutely brilliant time here. I thoroughly enjoyed all of it. When I studied English and German, I mean, the courses were just brilliant. The reading was fantastic. The tutors were great. The only thing that I don't think I ever did, and I'm slightly embarrassed about this now and I do regret it, was go to my German grammar class because it was at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning.
And of course, there you were using German quite quickly after you graduated at the BBC.
It was incredibly useful. I think I'd studied German and English partly because I thought that if you had an English degree, it wasn't very practical on its own, that it might not get you a job. But if you had a language, that was a very practical application. But I didn't really know how I would end up using it. And so when I saw the BBC job advertised to be, I think it was German business reporter, it was a stringer's job, so a freelancer's job, I thought there could not be a more perfect job that you go out, well, actually, apart from the business bit, because I couldn't add up very well and I'm absolute rubbish at figures, but that using German, being based in Berlin, would be absolutely ideal. And I got the job and I was absolutely thrilled. And the only thing that nearly tripped me up, they did some of the interview in German and that was fine. That wasn't the problem. But then they asked me about the difference between the discount rate and the repo rate at the Bundesbank, which, of course, as a business reporter, you would be reporting on. And it was only because the very nice chap who was interviewing me sort of pointed up and pointed down to say one sets the ceiling, one sets the floor, and I still can't remember which way around it was, that I actually passed the interview and got the job. And it was fantastic. When I went to Berlin and started speaking to people in German, using German, it was brilliant because I learned so much in the time that I was there that by the end of living in Germany, I think I was there for about 7 years in all, before the BBC noticed that I'd been there that long and decided that I might actually know something about it, so it was time to move me. I felt so thoroughly at home, and I still miss it.
An expert in German, but you then had to tackle Russian and French.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I became an expert in German, but I certainly knew a lot more about the place and the politics and the history and the language by the time I left. And the BBC turned to me and said, "You've been in Germany for 7 years. It's time to move on. As you speak German, Russian will be really easy." That's not true. And they gave me 3 weeks of mornings of language training with a Ukrainian opera singer in Berlin, where I was living. And I went to Russia and I hadn't got a clue. And my Russian was abysmal and appalling, and it has nothing in common with German whatsoever, apart from having fiendishly complex grammar. So it didn't really improve, actually. I had 3 years in Moscow with a lot of travelling around. By the end, there were some phrases I could manage. I mean, I could understand most of what was going on. I could shout at the traffic policeman when they stopped me for yet another bribe, all of this. But I never fell in love with the language in the way that I did with German. French was interesting because when I first got there, I spoke French with a German accent. And I have no idea why. It just seemed to be that there's a bit of my brain that says, this is a foreign language. And it came through, must have come through a sort of German filter. And so at the beginning in Paris, everyone would say, where in Germany are you from? And I was slightly taken aback until some said, no, you have got, you know, a strange accent. It's not English. It could be either German or it could be Belgian, which was very odd. And it improved over time. But when I first went to France, it was very, very ropey indeed. I loved being based there and the work was fascinating. But I did find French a challenge for quite some time. And I was just getting the hang of it when it was time to leave again.
Was that your choice or the BBC's choice?
Sadly, it was the BBC's choice. They allowed me to stay for 4 years because I think the post was supposed to be for 2 to 3 years. And at the end of the 3 years, I said, but there's an election next year. You can't possibly change correspondence in an election year. And it was the year that Sarkozy won the election, and it was fascinating. I was so glad to have stuck around for that because it was politics shifting in France and a lot of very high expectations about what would happen, what he would do, what the government would be like. Well, I had the first few months after that election. I think I left in September 2007, so you've kind of seen the start of an era that wasn't about Jacques Chirac, and it was absolutely fascinating. I mean, I love French politics, I love French strikes, So all the first kind of words that I needed to know in French post moving to Paris were things like, you know, en grève or manifestation and all of this. And it's funny because in Russian, my Russian had focused mainly around things like, you know, did Russian soldiers kill your father? Because we'd gone to Chechnya and done a lot of interviews there, and that's probably when I used most of the Russian I had. Germany, it was all about, you know, the Bundesbank and the repo rate and reunification and all of this. But in Paris, the other bit of my vocabulary that expanded a lot was the food and drink vocab, because obviously there are a lot of food and drink stories that needed to be done for BBC News. The champagne harvest, for example, which was often in crisis. The wine lake, which was an issue. French wine producers who had turned to terrorism because their prices had gone down because of competition from the New World. We had a great time, but after 4 years, the BBC said, thank you very much, but we shall move you along. You must go and do something else.
And defence could hardly be more different.
And defence has been very, very different. I mean, I had a small basis for it, in that when I've been in other countries, as a foreign correspondent, you tend to be sent to whatever, either trouble spot or, you know, sad event has happened. So it could be an earthquake, an avalanche, a train crash, a plane crash, or whatever. And during my time abroad, there were quite a few big foreign stories that involved wars. So Kosovo, Chechnya was happening, also had the Operation Desert Fox in Baghdad in 98. And so, having done all that, and Iraq in 2003, and Afghanistan in 2001 and 2002, I'd seen some of the more practical side, or what it was like for people going to the front line. And so that actually appealed. Also, because I'd done OTC while I was at Southampton, the Officer Training Corps, and had a great time. Really, really enjoyed it. Didn't want to join the army at the end of it, realised I was far too unfit and would be completely useless. But, like the people who did it, made some very good friends. And it all kind of hung together, and I was very lucky I got the job, and I started that in 2007, and I have thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it.
It's an obvious thing to say, but we still regard the defence business as very much a male world. How have you got on there?
It is and it isn't. I mean, I think people would be surprised now how much it's changed. I remember when I did a project, I think it was while I was still at university, about women in the army or on the front line. There were very, very, very few. Very few positions open to women. It wasn't something that women in the 80s could do. They were mostly in uniform as not quite glorified secretaries or administrators, but it wasn't a frontline role at all. And I think now there are a lot more women involved in defence, some in quite senior roles. Not the most senior roles, heads of service are still all male. But if you look inside the MOD as well, you've got a lot of female civil servants on the front lines, amazing amount of women. I was really surprised. And not just being doctors or nurses or doing logistics, but an awful lot of jobs. Frontline medics, for example. A lot of women going out on all of those patrols every single day, every single week, in the really frontline places. I met an RAF woman not long ago in Helmand, who was out at one of the most basic forward operating bases, who was there as a cultural advisor, spoke Pashtun. So you do meet some remarkable people doing this job.
So you've been there 3 years. What next?
I'm planning to stay doing this. I like this. And it's not quite like being abroad. If you're abroad, the BBC has you on a certain length of contract. Hopefully with defence, it doesn't finish quite that soon. I had one predecessor, Mark Leahy, who did 11 years. Another who did 2 years, 3 years. I'm going to cling on to this